Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacevic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. Now that we have the training, we have the team, the tools, all those things in place, let's get into some of the technical details or steps, if you will, of some of the applications that we mentioned. So what are the proper steps to use when using ultrasound for lubrication?
Proper steps to take when using ultrasound for lubrication. Well, I mean, before you actually pick up a grease gun, you need to fully educate yourself on what it is you're greasing. The biggest problem that we see with lubrication programs is either the bearing gets under-greased or it gets over-greased. Over-greasing is probably more detrimental to a bearing's life than under-greasing it. But in both cases, over and under greasing accounts for at least 40% of premature bearing failures. I was astounded to learn once, and I was in a bearing, it was a workshop, I can't even remember, it was years ago, but I was astounded to learn one simple fact that stuck with me, and that is that 95% of all bearings made never make it to the end of their engineered life cycle. It's incredible.
That is a ton.
Yeah, literally nothing ever lasts as long as it should have lasted, as intended or engineered to last. And then that statistic blew me away. Lubrication, or poor lubrication practices, accounts for 40% of premature bearing failure. Steps to take when using ultrasound for lubrication. Well, first of all, you got to know what you're lubricating. Is it a sealed bearing? Well, some people might say, well, if it's a sealed bearing, why is there a grease nipple on the motor? Well, because the motor manufacturer isn't the bearing manufacturer. Just because there's a grease nipple on a motor doesn't mean you should stick your grease gun on it. You got to know what's inside there first. So that means documenting and creating a database. In addition to knowing whether it's a sealed bearing or not, or a greasable bearing, you should also know the capacity of the bearing. So what's the size of the shaft? What's the size of the bearing? What's the theoretical quantity of grease that that bearing should have injected into it before it's considered to be over-greased? Probably the biggest step, and I won't even call it a step, I'm going to call it a hurdle. I'm going to call it a challenge. And that is, again, we go back to culture change. And when it comes to bearing lubrication or motor bearing lubrication, the culture change is getting away from greasing that bearing on a calendar-based schedule or on a time-based schedule, and getting to greasing that bearing based on condition. We talked about it in the eight pillars, how each of the eight pillars is defined by fit, friction, impacted, and turbulence. Well, why do we grease bearings? We grease bearings to reduce friction. So if your goal is to reduce the friction in a bearing, an ultrasound is the best tool out there for determining friction levels, why wouldn't you use ultrasound data to schedule your lubrication intervals? I come to an electric motor. One of our field techs sent me a picture of an electric motor that he just snapped a picture of in Croatia. And the thing had every 3,062 hours, give this bearing 32 grams of grease. What is that based on? Not only is it a lucky guess, but it's a crapshoot, because the guy that wrote those instructions on the motor plate had no idea where that motor was going to be installed. Was it going to be running in minus 40 temperatures in Fort McMurray? Or was it going to be running in plus 40 degrees in the middle of the desert? No idea. Is it going to be working in dry conditions, in humid conditions? No idea. But there it is. Grease this bearing every 3,062 hours, regardless. So he went out and the bearing was due for grease. So they went out and they greased it. But they greased it with the SDT lead expert attached to it. And lo and behold, two shots of grease, and the darn thing was over-greased. The decibel level went up 3-4 dB, and they said, whoa, stop, this thing doesn't need any grease. The maintenance guy said, yes, it does. It's been 3,062 hours. It needs grease. Well, the lube expert says it doesn't need grease, and if you want to destroy this motor, tell the instructions on the plate. If you want to just leave this perfectly functioning motor as is, listen to the lube expert. Yep. So, huge, huge step. Know what you're greasing. Now, change that culture away from time scheduled to on condition.
That's huge. You know, you reduce the consumption of grease. You don't over-grease things or under-grease things anymore. It's getting the right amount of grease at the right time, which is vital to the long life of that asset.
Yeah, exactly.
So, we got a basic understanding of acoustic lubrication. What about looking for leaks with ultrasound? Is it as simple as just pointing the ultrasound tool into an area and hoping to find leaks? Is that as simple as it gets, or is there a little bit more behind that?
It actually is. It actually is that easy. The beautiful thing about finding leaks with ultrasound is this is a great job to give to a summer student, to a junior engineer, someone who's just looking to get to cut the teeth. This is what wading into the shallow end of the pool. Essentially, and you can do these inspections anytime. Like, you don't need to wait for a shutdown when it's nice and peaceful and quiet. You can go out there at 130 decibels of ambient background noise and find all these leaks. It's fantastic. All you do is put the headphones on, adjust the amplification, select the sensor, and then just pointing at the compressed airlines, you're waving it back and forth, up and down, and listening for that real telltale hissing sound. You know when you hear a compressed air leak, it sounds like a compressed air leak. Now, some of the steps that I would encourage that you follow before doing that would be to, A, familiarize yourself with the safety elements of the plant. So one of the things that you'll do is you'll go out there and just get caught up in the wonderful world of ultrasound. And you're walking around the plant in a bit of a different world, actually, because you've got these noise attenuating headphones on, and you're focused on what you're doing. Well, you better keep your head up and not walk into the path of the forklift. Keep your head down and know where the yellow markers are on the floor so that you're not walking into traffic areas. You can get overly zealous in, oh, I hear a leak, I hear a leak, and you get too close to moving machinery and either get the ultrasound instrument caught into machinery or your hand. So pay attention to simple, common sense safety aspects and make sure that whoever's performing the inspection is safety trained. As far as finding the leaks go, no, it's a point and shoot. You hear them, and then as you hear those leaks, you zero in on where they are, and then you document those leaks, you tag those leaks, and you make sure that a work order is created to get those leaks fixed. I still remember the very first leak inspection that I did is in 1991. It was for a company called Lasco Steel in Whitby, Ontario, and the plant's still there. Now it's called Gerdau. It's owned by the Brazilians, the Gerdau nursery. Well, that plant is still there, and they paid me to come in and inspect their entire plant, and I must have tagged 150, 200 leaks. And a lot of those leaks were in an area of the plant that had been decommissioned. They weren't actually producing any steel at all, but they were still feeding compressed airlines through there, and the place was leaking like crazy. Well, I tagged them all, and I tagged all the leaks in the production part of the plant, and I came back a year later, and my tags were just sitting there blowing in the wind. You know, they paid me several thousand dollars to find the leaks, and they didn't save the time. They didn't fix them.
Yeah, so a key part of that is make sure you follow up and perform the repairs after you've done the analysis and found all the leaks.
Yeah,
it's like some of the RCM implementations I've seen. They go through the work of the analysis, they do all that work, but then they don't implement the recommendations, and it sits on a shelf. So, yeah. Same thing.
Just because I named names with Lasco and Gerdau, I want to come back and just close that story off and saying, on my second trip to the plant, I sat down with the powers that be, and I said, listen, I'm not going to go out there and find the leaks that I've already found again unless you guys are going to fix them. So to their credit, they actually did at that point implement a repair program. And so here we are 27 years later, and that plant is still productively running. And not because SDT and Alan Reinstra and Ultrasound saved them, but certainly we contributed to helping keeping them in a productive and profitable way. So they did eventually fix those leaks.
Very good. Very good. Like I said, that follow-up is vitally important. Now, with
and,
that,
and they're still in business. Our goal is to help companies be competitive and stay in business. And so here we go, 27 years later. Lots of steel mills in Ontario have closed in the last 27 years. That's not one of them.
Yeah, and if we can take any type of cost of goods out of the equation for customers through maintenance, through condition monitoring, through improved energy efficiency, that all goes right to the bottom line and drives their profitability.
Yes, sir.
Now, with that, what type of documentation should organizations keep and use while involved in an ultrasound program? You mentioned work orders, you know, your tags. What else should be involved?
Success stories. For me, that's above and beyond all of the, you know, the record keeping and so forth. I think that what we fail, what maintenance reliable people fail to do is to stand up on their soapbox and scream out to management, look at what I did for you. Look at what I've accomplished. You open up your wallet and you finance this ultrasound program, and here's how I'm paying you back. So document your wins. If that means getting a piece of gator board from Staples or from Dinko's or whatever and sitting down and drawing some charts and graphs and making a great big beautiful chart, and then go hang that chart on the wall outside your boss's office, or hang that chart in the lunchroom where everybody can see it. So not just the maintenance and reliability people see the bits of ultrasound, but everybody walking into that room gets a sniff of what you're doing. And that's what drives the culture change, because we don't need to just drive culture change for maintenance and reliability. Improving asset reliability is the ownership for that goal should be everybody in the plant. All the people that I named at the beginning of the podcast that need to be part of the ultrasound program, but it really doesn't it extend to the gardener, the janitor, the custodian, the electrician. It extends to everybody who uses that building to accomplish the company mission statement. And that's the culture change you want to create. Even though the person is not involved in the ultrasound program, they're aware of what you're doing every day because you document it. And I think it just creates a positive spirit throughout the whole organization. And so to get back to your question, because I think I'm ranting on a tangent here, to me, the most important documentation that you can do is a documentation that celebrates your wins.
Yeah, I always say that, you know, maintenance, engineering staff, they all need to take a basic course on sales and marketing so they can promote the great things that they do. Because like you said, normally they don't. They just fix it, they move on, or they prevent the failure and move on. They don't promote that. So sharing those success stories are vital to the long-term culture change that we're trying to drive with a lot of the things we talked about today. Now, with most condition monitoring programs, there's some sort of trending and analysis that has to go on. Is this required for ultrasound?
No. Yes. Yes and no. Is trending analysis software required as part of your ultrasound program? Some of it. It's definitely required for the condition monitoring element of your ultrasound program. But remember, if we go back to the eight pillars, a lot of the defects that drive asset condition are binary. They're not trendable. What do I mean by that? Well, is an air leak a trendable defect? No, it's binary. It either leaks or it doesn't leak. Well, some people will argue that leak detection or isn't condition monitoring. I beg to differ. If you go out and you do a survey of your compressed air system and you come back with a list of 50 leaks that you found, didn't you just monitor the condition of your air leaks, of your compressed air system? For sure you did. And what's the condition? Well, it leaks. All right. That's not trendable, but you definitely know the condition. If you go out and monitor all your steam traps and you find out that 40% of your steam traps are failed shut or open, well, you've just monitored the condition of your steam system. It's not trendable because you can't trend the evolution of a steam trap failure. It's binary. It's either stuck open, it's stuck closed, or it's working. Now, on the other hand, we start talking about bearing condition monitoring using SDT's patented four condition indicators to help us diagnose and predict bearing failures. Well, if I've got four condition indicators that are going to tell me how a bearing's evolving from a year ago to today, I certainly want software that will allow me to trend those condition indicators so I can spot changes and spot defects.
So once again, it goes back to knowing what those goals are and what you want your program to be and what you're going to be using it for. And that will help guide whether you need that software, the analysis time, all those different things.
Right. And I define ultrasound programs, and then I define world-class ultrasound programs. Now, not every organization needs all eight pillars because not every organization has steam traps. So maybe not every one of those eight pillars applies to you, but you don't have a world-class ultrasound program until you've implemented every pillar that's applicable.
Yes, absolutely. This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out Iridicio's IBL Blended Learning for Maintenance and Reliability Professionals. This SMRP-accredited project-based curriculum will take you through all aspects of a maintenance and reliability program and provides you with all the tools you need to generate a 30 times return on investment for your organization and a set of credentials from the University of Tennessee for you. You can find out more at ibltraining.com. Now, what other considerations should technicians be aware of when using ultrasound?
In what respect, James?
So should they be aware of any potential interference or influences from machinery? Do they have to be aware of different set points or technologies out there that will influence how the readings are interpreted, gathered, analyzed, that sort of stuff?
Okay. Well, we've already spoken about equipment safety, so I won't go back, personal safety, so I won't go down that path again. But if I was to, let's talk about leak detection, because when we talk about leak detection, what are we detecting? We're detecting turbulence. So that's the T in fit, friction, impacting, and turbulence. So compressed air leaks produce turbulent flow at the site of the leak, or that compressed airline stops being straight and goes around a 90-degree elbow. At those changes in the path of flow, you're going to have also turbulence. But that turbulence might not necessarily be a leak. So when I'm finding a compressed air leak, I may hear turbulent flow through the steel of the pipe and be fooled into thinking that it's a leak when it's not really a leak. I mean, there's ways that we show you in training to distinguish between turbulent flow and turbulence from a leak. So that's something that you need to be aware of. But when it comes to condition monitoring a bearing, for example, there's definitely parameters that you need to consider for consistency of reading. First of all, the setup of the instrument. So the SDT equipment has smart technology, and it very simply and quickly guides the user to adjusting the amplification of the device, for example, to the bearing. So you don't need to remember where your amplification was set previously. Also, to regards to frequency tuning, the SDT equipment won't allow you to take a bad reading to the frequency tuning. But you also need to be aware of rotational speed. If you measure a bearing at 50 RPMs, and then you come back a month later and measure that same bearing, but it's now going at 1800 RPM, you can't really trend or compare that data. So you need to pay attention to rotational speed, loaded or unloaded. You need to pay attention to where you take your reading. If you're taking the reading at the 12 o'clock position of on the bearing versus the 6 o'clock position, and the 6 o'clock position is the load position, so you should anticipate maybe a higher decibel reading or a higher signals on the 6 o'clock position. So all of these factors do need to be considered, set up, and going back to an earlier question, can you just hand this to a technician without training? Well, yeah, you can, but is it going to matter to take all these things into consideration?
Yeah, very good points, and that's exactly why we need that training. So with that, do you have any tips or words of wisdom to share with people who are performing ultrasound inspections at the moment that they may not be aware of?
Well, I do, but I mean, this is the podcast. We're going to try to keep the podcast in a reasonably listenable length. I've published a book on ultrasound. I've written blogs. I've written over 200, short three-sentence tips on how to find a leak, how to find electrical inspections, how to do this, how to do that. So I don't know how I picked just one tip to share here.
How about you tell us where we can find those tips, and we can use that then?
That's a great idea. We have a couple of blog sites. We have a blog site. First of all, our company website, which is www.sdtultrasound.com. And there's a ton of resources there and more being added all the time. We have a blog site that we're getting started with right now called wehearmore.com. And another great place to find tips and also just to converse with the community would be to come to the SDT International Facebook page, the SDT International LinkedIn page, and then we have a user group on LinkedIn called the Ultrasound of Power Users. And this is an open forum where like-minded ultrasound experts from all over the world jump in and just discuss difficulties, successes, wins, etc. So there's no shortage of areas where you can find tips. And then I should also mention the SDT YouTube channel, which has got countless videos in multiple languages.
Oh, very good. We'll make sure to link to all those in the show notes. Now, hopefully this next one, you know, we can narrow it down a little bit. What is the one thing you see done incorrectly with ultrasound? And that being said, what should we change moving forward with ultrasound?
For me, the biggest pet peeve is a lot of the myths that have been spread over the decades about tunable frequency. Any high-quality ultrasound instrument gives the inspector the ability to change the frequency of his device. But this feature needs to be used with caution. And it's not always used with caution. And in a lot of cases, it leads to errors. SDT has gone to great lengths to minimize those errors and to restrict access to tunable frequency in certain modes. But what people don't understand electronically is what they're doing when they tune the frequency of their instrument. And essentially what they're doing is they're using electronics to shift the bandwidth of their instrument away from a specific frequency. So if you can imagine that most ultrasound instruments come equipped with piezoelectric quartz crystal sensors that are tuned to 40,000 hertz or 40 kilohertz. So the optimal listening range for a quality 40 kilohertz sensor would be just slightly off its center frequency of 40 kilohertz. So in SDT's case, we set our center frequency at 38.4. So we slightly offset it from the center frequency of the sensor. If your ultrasound detector is tuned to 40 kilohertz and your sensor is tuned to 40 kilohertz, then it would just cancel each other out and you wouldn't hear anything. When you shift that filter away from 38.4 kilohertz to some other frequency, what the users forget is that they're still using a 40 kilohertz sensor. So the instrument itself is calibrated to function perfectly at that 38.4 frequency. If you shift the frequency down to 20 kilohertz, now you're asking your ultrasound detector to tune in to 20 kilohertz, but you're still using a 40 kilohertz sensor. You may hear some different things and you may be able to filter out some different machine anomalies and focus in on something. So from a troubleshooting point of view, maybe that's okay. But if you're trying to do trendable, repeatable, and reliable condition monitoring, tuning the frequency is absolutely destroying the data. One time I asked a guy, he was using a competitor's instrument, and the competitor's instrument had a little knob on the handle that allowed him to analog tune the frequency. And I said to him, so what frequency do you use your instrument at when you're troubleshooting or condition monitoring your bearings? And his answer was, whatever frequency the instrument was tuned to when I switched it on. In other words, he wasn't really paying attention to tunable frequency. When you turn on an SDT 270, it automatically defaults to its center frequency of 38.4 kilohertz. You never fall victim to picking up an instrument and having it set up the way the last user used it. So that we override that potential error right there. The second thing that we safeguard against is when you're in planned survey mode or condition monitoring mode where you're actually collecting trendable data, you cannot tune the frequency away from the calibrated center frequency of the sensor. And these safeguards make sure that what they do is they ensure the integrity of the data. And so to answer your question in a rather long-winded roundabout way, The one thing I see done incorrectly with ultrasound is using tunable frequency when you're trying to trend repeatable data. And the one thing that I would change regarding the use of all ultrasound instruments, regardless of manufacturer, is lock out access to tunable frequency when I'm in data collection mode.
Very good. Data consistency, data repeatability is vital to any long-term condition monitoring program, regardless what it is. We want to be able to take repeatable readings, analyze them in a consistent manner. And if the data is not consistent, it's not going to help us at all. What is the one action you want our listeners to take away from this conversation today?
Hear more. I want the listeners to go out and hear more. And by hear more, I don't mean go out and use an SDT ultrasound detector. By hear more, I want you to go out and learn. There's so much access to information. Go on websites, do searches on the internet. Go to conferences and learn from subject matter experts. Email me. Send me an email and ask me a question. Go out and learn. In doing so, what will happen is if you have any trepidations, any fears, or you're in awe of the technology and you're afraid to take the next step, go out and learn about it. Ask me some questions. Create interactions with like-minded people. Seek out experts and align yourself and associate yourself with other people who have already implemented successful programs. Learn from their mistakes. Learn from their wins. And just educate yourself.
Yeah, I think those are some great words of wisdom to close out the episode. Now, Alan, first off, thank you for taking the time to share your vast knowledge on ultrasound with us. I learned some great tips, and I'm sure our listeners did as well. But before we go, where can people find out more about you? Are you and your team at any events and activities in the near future? What else is going on with SDT Ultrasound?
We're extremely active in the education community, in the conference communities, and just the maintenance reliability community as a whole. I mean, there's a lot of ways to get a hold of us. First and foremost, our toll-free number, our international number, or my email address, which I'm more than happy if you provide that to any of the listeners. Our website, sdtultrasound.com. A great way to get a hold of me is through my LinkedIn profile, through our Facebook page, to the power users group that I mentioned on LinkedIn. But as far as what we're involved with from a community point of view, well, we participate in every major international conference that focuses on maintenance and reliability. So I'll give a few plugs here to the International Maintenance Conference, which is run by ReliabilityWeb.com out of Southern Florida. They also run the Reliability Conference, which is another international conference held yearly in Las Vegas. We participate in NORIA's Reliable Plant. We participate in the Society of Maintenance Reliability Practitioners, SMRP's, annual conference. You'll also find SDT at IMVAC, which is a new conference that another one of your iPod contributors, Jason Tranter, has started up with his Mobius Institute. And IMVAC is focused on for machinery vibration and condition monitoring. So that's a perfect place to find us. And so we're going to be at that conference in the Gold Coast, Australia in just 3 short weeks. So yeah, there's no shortage of ways to find SDT on the web or at conferences.
All right. I will make sure to link to all these in the show notes so our listeners can just click the button and take them right there. And you know, it's a little bit redundant because we covered a bunch of them already in the tips, but are there any other resources that you want to share with our listeners? I know the SDT website has all kinds of great downloads, audio files, all kinds of great things for users to learn more about ultrasound and get more acquainted with not only the principle behind it, but actually hear some of the different sounds that they would pick up in a plant.
Well, sure. We do have a sound file library which we can give access to. But I guess this would be a great, I think you just set me up to give a good plug to a book that I co-authored with Tom Murphy, Hear More, A Guide to Using Ultrasound for Leak Detection and Condition Monitoring. And that Hear More book is, I mean, thousands and thousands are in print, and we have lots of them available on the shelf. So if anybody wants a copy of that book, they're available through the Reliability Web MRO bookstore. And I think that the Hear More book, it's probably the single best resource there is for people who want to pick up an old-fashioned. A lot of people don't read books anymore. They read iPads and Kindles. But I mean, this is a great way just to sit down with a book and learn everything there is to know about this technology.
Yeah, it is a great book. I've gone through it twice now, so definitely you can learn lots from it, and definitely include a link to that in the show notes as well. So,
awesome.
Well, Alan, once again, thank you for taking the time out of your busy day to have this conversation with us and share your vast knowledge around ultrasound with the listeners. I greatly appreciate it, and I'm sure our listeners do as well. So with that, thank you and have a great day.
Thanks, James. It was an absolute pleasure.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.